American colonial experiment of the early 17th century was driven by an intense desire for religious freedom. The Pilgrims and Puritans were utterly committed to using the opportunity to create a Christian society. Unsurprisingly, ever since the American experience has been steeped in various experiments and theories of Christian leadership, this includes even the developments of new sects and religions, including Mormonism. Flash forward to 2016, some 400 years later, and the U.S. presidential campaign has never seemed any more religious. But now with overtones of international faiths, multiculturalism, and Islam, and we have been assured that Donald Trump is a Protestant Christian, even if he seems to lack specific knowledge of the Bible, his favorite book, or to understand that all men are supposed to ask for forgiveness. And daily are the warnings by Senator Ted Cruz's main backer, his John the Baptist, Glenn Beck, to watch for the judgment of God, collapse of society, and looming apocalypse. In fact, Beck clearly sees himself as some kind of a modern prophet who has been given a heavy burden of preparing the people to save America, seeded from his own listeners. It is not unusual for Beck to proudly recount his resistance to the heavy hand of God and then recapitulate his many accurate prophecies. And all this from a member of the LDS Church. Perhaps more disturbing is Senator Cruz's association with dominionism and some of the ominous promises of how America will be placed under Old Testament law without input from the populace. This will remind some of Sharia law, Muslim law, whereby the promise of redistribution of wealth from the rich to Christians will strike others as a whiff of socialism. So what does the future hold for religion and government of Americans after 2016? Who would even be brave enough to guess in this season of surprises? Stay tuned, sports fans. Good morning, Kelly here. It is 6:08 on the 18th of March. And I prepared a show. I've been thinking about this for a little while to get into a show that covered some of the religious elements that are going on out there. And I've collected a lot of different things. Plus, I've got some other things. I've got a Zika map, that new disease. I've got more on Miami's Doogie Howser. He's back in action. Well, actually, he just got spanked in court. But I have a lot on this topic that we're discussing, which is religion 2016. What are the angles? And as Kathy has already called in and said, she found dominionism one of the scariest things she's ever heard of. I don't really find it that scary, but I'm very, very, to be completely honest, I'm totally fascinated if Ted Cruz is a dominionist, if he was really going to try to do this. But my beginning argument would be that dominionism certainly isn't as bad as what we've been under for the last few decades, especially the last 7 years, this kind of socialism and indifferent leadership and kind of making reckless risks in the Middle East and hoping they'll work out with the Muslim Spring, and also to leave the border open and encourage increasing numbers of people to come across it. I mean, all this stuff, I still do not understand why there is not more of alarm out there for the kind of decision-making. It's almost like we're in a state of suspended animation. Now, they're showing posters from Havana to President Obama, a picture of him under the Cuban and American flag, which is totally appropriate, of course. But, you know, I really think there's going to be, when this president leaves office, there's going to be an enormous sigh of relief. And people are going to be, you know, kind of checking themselves to see if they're still alive. and just a sense of absolute, but you know, we made it, we got through this time, and to be so glad that Obama, who seems to laugh at every opportunity to laugh at the fears and the aspirations of Americans, and seems to get a real kick. I saw a clip of him a couple of nights ago where they were asking him about the bailout of the banks and Detroit General Motors and everything, and he just started laughing. And the host, the 60 Minutes host, said, "Are you punch drunk? Are you drunk or whatever?" And I just thought, you know, we're going through this incredible time in which the president was not personally in any danger. He's in the White House. He's totally isolated and protected, and he's sitting there laughing. So anyway, I think it's appropriate that people would turn to their religion during a time of what they consider to be a crisis, this kind of lost period where anything seems possible. Anything seems possible because there's just such indifference and the sense that the leadership of this country really doesn't care. And so you've got Trump arising because Trump stands for the proposition that if you get one person who stands up, who's not afraid of the government, who's not afraid to speak his mind, he can conquer America. As a matter of fact, there's fears out there that he's going to conquer the world. People are so, various countries are so just totally, it just seemed rattled by this. And I think it just goes to show you, to the extent that the world, not just America, but the world has lost the ability to think for itself. And, you know, to be afraid of one person coming into power, he's not exactly, Hitler, although according to Glenn Beck, he is. All right, where should I start with this? All right, let me get into Ted Cruz's past. Now, if Donna's out there, you can start wringing your hands, Donna, because we're gonna talk about a few things that might seem a little bit unnerving. I want to give you, first of all, this Dominion theology. I'll give you just a basic background of it. Dominion theology is the idea that God created the earth and put Adam and Eve in it and gave them dominion. And then he told them to be fruitful and multiply, right? And then Satan comes along and there's this biting of the apple and the sin and everything. And the dominion was taken away and given to Satan. Now, this is according to this theology. And after that, then Jesus comes back and takes the authority back over the earth, and dominion is returned to Christians, who are then instructed and directed to take over the earth. And so, relatively straightforward set of ideas that were not completely disconnected from what the founding fathers wanted. But the difference between that society and this society is we are now multicultural. We are now, basically including all faiths, all creeds, all races. And it's a different time here. All right, so we're looking. If you just tuned in, I'm doing a little study, a little bit deeper into the story of Dominionism, and also I'm going to look into some of Glenn Beck's activities. There's an element of religion in this election cycle that's unusual. Number one, which I actually found entertaining when Donald Trump stood up and said his favorite book was the Bible. He doesn't seem to be familiar with it, but and he says that he wasn't aware that he needed to ask forgiveness for anything, which I mean is really, it's in keeping with his overall personality. But you've also got this thing of Islam that, you know, that the pot stirring by Trump saying people that are Muslims need to be stopped from coming in until we get a handle on immigration. Now, switch over to, obviously the left is not as caught up in the religious element, but I will just say for the sake of the argument, socialism is clearly a religious movement under the guise of economics and politics, but it is a religious movement in much in the way the Eastern ideas, Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, Shintoism, all these movements are philosophical in nature. It's basically philosophical religion in which God has been sucked out of it, but it maintains the formula basically of Catholicism if you go back into the history of it. Anyway, so let's get here to Ted Cruz. What is Dominionism? Dominionism is a movement that says we as Christians need to take over the earth. Now, the dominion, this dominion was given to Adam and Eve, be fruitful and multiply, and, basically go out and conquer the earth and tame it and everything. And that was part of the symbolism of Adam naming the animals, because in doing that, he takes dominion over them. So, now here's a little bit from this article. This is a beautiful article, by the way, called Dreaming: A Christian Aristocracy, the Evolution and Meaning of Dominionism. And this is from Friends of Justice .wordpress. So, but if you look up Dreaming a Christian Aristocracy, I'm sure it'll come up. So anyway, let me read you just a little bit of this. The Reconstructionist movement is rooted in the theology of Reformed theologian Cornelius Van Til. All right, so Van Til is an enormous name in Reformed circles, which in Calvinist Reformed circles. Calvinist belief system is also referred to as Reformed. As a young man, Van Til was caught up in a major theological controversy in 1929 that prompted a group of professors at Princeton Theological Seminary to then step out and create the ultra-Orthodox Westminster Theological Seminary under the leadership of J. Gresham Machen, and Machen is one of the most important Christian leaders of the last century. All right, now Van Til comes up with presuppositionalism. Now, here's the idea in a nutshell. There is no neutral ground between Christians and non-Christians because Christian rationality springs from unique presuppositions about God and the Bible. Van Til believed that only Christian thinking could be described as truly rational because secular intellectuals reject the idea of divine revelation and must therefore come up with the conclusion that life is ultimately meaningless. The Christian world is rational since it is the creation of a rational God, but you cannot begin with autonomous human reasoning and arguing your way to God or philosophy, basically. Van Til taught this. You must put God into the equation as he's revealed in the Bible. Okay, so then he has an enormous impact on the Reformed movement in Protestantism last century. Now, switch over to Rus's John Rushdoony. He took these ideas and then began to write about them, and he wrote about the covenant of God in Israel portrayed in the Old Testament. He believed that was transferred to the church. And I'm trying to remember if that's what they call replacement theology. But anyway, he was a student of Van Til at Westminster, and he believed that the new and true Israel, the Christian church, has a mandate for complete dominion over every facet of life, the physical universe, government, politics, public education, popular entertainment, without exception, every area of life. Now, listen to this. Since there can be no neutral ground between believers and unbelievers, Rush Dooney taught Christians cannot cooperate with unbelievers in any serious endeavor. While there might be a measure of shared leadership necessary at the early stage of the process, Christians must ultimately lead the earth. All right, so he wrote, the purpose of Christ's coming was in terms of a Christian mandate. The redeemed are called to the original purpose set down by God in the Garden of Eden to exercise dominion under God, to be covenant keepers, and to fulfill the righteousness of the law. Man is summoned to create the society God requires. All right, so he writes this big book, or series, Institutes of Biblical Law, and that has had an enormous impact. All right. Now, let's take a little break here so you can let that sink in. And I'm going to have a clip from John Rush Dooney. You might find it illuminating. 631 Kelly O'Connell here, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450. We're talking about the implications of the dominion theology that Ted Cruz believes and that has influenced Glenn Beck and has been enormously influential in American Protestantism in the last, say, 100 years. We'll be right back.
Do you want to be the lover of another? Undercover, you could even be the man. Do you want to be the slayer? Do you want to be the song?
It's 6:35. It's 43 degrees outside, and looking for maybe a little news for you. Anything big that's come up? And Sanders not planning to drop out of the race, which is, I guess, a relief to some people. I don't see a lot going on this morning. All right, so this is a good morning to tackle this. All right, this stuff is absolutely fascinating. We're talking about, if you just tuned in, the theological beliefs of Cruz. Now, I'm going to get into Beck in a minute, although, you know, I've gotten into Beck before. I've actually gotten into this a little bit, but not really enough for I think, to really understand it. Now, we've also got... Understand also that Rick Perry is a member or a part of this group. So he was also extremely influenced by this. All right, so let's go over a few of the ideas. Dominionism, Ted Cruz's beliefs, his dad's beliefs. To take dominion over the world means you have to take dominion over America. To take dominion over America, you have to take dominion over the American church. To take dominion over that, you must take dominion over the Bible. To take dominion over the Bible means you're taking dominion over Jesus. And according to this, in the world of dominionism, Jesus is only allowed to speak when his words are consistent with biblical worldview that Rush Dooney has accepted. And they call him a Pharisee here. All right. Now, this is the part that I find absolutely fascinating. Once Christians gain control of the political machinery in America, according to Russus John Rush Dooney, who's the big name in dominionism, the criminal justice system would be transformed beyond recognition. Jails would only be used to hold suspects for brief periods pending trial. Prisons would largely disappear. Property crimes would be resolved through a process of financial restoration coupled with a version of indentured servanthood indistinguishable from slavery. Most felonies, including adultery, fornication, homosexuality, and heresy, would warrant either the death penalty or, if the magistrate was in a compassionate mood, lifelong servitude. Homosexuality is abhorrent to dominionists. It matters little whether the homosexual behavior is an expression of choice or biology. It is counter to the biblical worldview and must therefore be rejected. If God calls it an abomination, that's what it is. All right. Now, finally, and most significantly, Rajadhuni regarded democracy as a convention utterly at odds with biblical Christianity. The group with the most votes does not and must not speak for God. America could only be truly Christian, Rajadhuni believed, when ruled by a religious aristocracy. All right, so I understand that's probably all a little bit difficult to take in, but that is the belief system of Ted Cruz and Rick Perry and a lot of other people, and Glenn Beck has been influenced by it. Now, I want to get back to one thing, this idea of the death penalty. I, in particular, focused on this in my research for you because I've got a surprising, some surprising facts for you that it appears that the Dominionists have not even bothered to look into. It's 640 on the button, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. We're going to come back and get into this. I've got a clip of Rush Dooney for you. You're going to find it compelling stuff. We'll be right back.
Let me tell you something. You
All right, I've got a clip here between Bill Moyers, who often gets into religious stuff, and Russus John Rajadhuni on Christian Reconstructionism. Check this out.
In his epic, The Institutes of Biblical Law, Rajadhuni set forth the basic doctrines of Christian Reconstruction. Every word of the Bible is literally true. The Bible contains God's law for all people, for all times, for individuals, as well as government. An American society is in decay, he writes. It is the task of Christians to reconstruct this country using the Bible as their blueprint.
Why the Bible? Why does it become the basis for this new society? Because the Bible is God's word. Because the Bible is God's declaration of the way of life. Here is justice. But the laws in the Old Testament were written for a primitive people living in a nomadic agricultural society. And here we are living in a modern technological industrial society joined by economic forces that are beyond nations and beyond governments. How can the laws that were considered a covenant between a small group of people on a tiny sliver of geography 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago apply to the world you and I live in?
Because they're God's truth.
If the Bible is the basis for law, why not just simply substitute it for the Constitution?
The Constitution gives us procedural law, not a substantive morality. So anyone can use the Constitution for good or ill, but it has to be the people as they change and govern themselves. The Constitution cannot save this country.
I
Ancient Jerusalem is the model, for Reconstructionists, of the ideal biblical government. Israel was a theocracy. God ruled Israel, and God's laws, the covenant, form the sole basis for the social, political, economic, and cultural order of the day. Modern Washington is a far cry from ancient Jerusalem. To Reconstructionists, it's more like Sodom and Gomorrah.
I think people sense that things are falling apart, economically, politically, and in every way, that a worldwide breakdown is underway of our culture. And they are looking for answers as to what does the future hold? The state is a bankrupt institution. As a result, they're going to have to find it religiously or go into a dark age. And men are fearful. As a result, they are being thrown back on their basic resources. If they have a faith, they are looking to that faith to provide the answers. And so you have Islamic fundamentalism. You have within the Christian community a desire to go back to the biblical roots and to reorder society biblically.
You've written that the Bible calls for the death penalty, and I'm just running down a variety of things, as you can see. You've written that the Bible calls for the death penalty for some 15 crimes, rape, sodomy, adultery.
Adultery, because in the Bible, the basic institution is the family. There's no law of treason against the state. The Bible doesn't even imagine anything remotely like that. But the basic institution is the family. And so several of the death penalties are associated with the family and its life.
So adultery was considered theft of the family.
It was, yes, it was treason to the family.
Homosexuality.
Yes, it was treason to the family.
Worthy of the death sentence.
What?
Worthy of the death sentence. Deserving of the death sentence.
Yes, that's what Paul says.
And what about the one that Christian Reconstructionists are really suspect on, and that's incorrigible young people, juvenile delinquency, because there are cases in the Old Testament where incorrigible young people were put to death.
The law there is very interesting. It specifies a son, not a child, and an incorrigible delinquent. Now, the case of the incorrigible son was chosen first because blood could not be above justice. So the parents had to participate by saying, yes, our son is indeed an incorrigible criminal. Second, it was the foundation of the death penalty in the United States until 72, whereby a third or fourth offender, depending on the state, who was a habitual criminal, was executed. That's where we get the law, right out of that law from Deuteronomy.
But you would reinstate the death penalty for some of these, or all of these, biblical crimes?
I wouldn't.
But I'm the Reconstructed Society.
I'm saying that this is what God requires. I'm not saying that everything in the Bible I like. Some of it rubs me the wrong way. But I'm simply saying this is what God requires. This is what God says is justice. Therefore, I don't feel I have a choice.
And the agents of God would carry out the laws?
The civil government would, on these things.
So you would have a civil government based upon...
Oh, yes, I'm not an anarchist.
No, I understand
that. I'm close to being a libertarian, but...
But the civil law is based upon the biblical law.
Yes.
And so you'd have a civil government carrying out a religious mandate.
Oh, yes, because all law is a religious mandate. It just depends on what religion it is. Well, but then, all law is a religious mandate.
Then which religion runs the civil government?
That's the question.
Fascinating stuff, huh? All right. I've got an analysis of capital punishment under under Jewish law, which I think you might find notable. 649 in this particular application, 649 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE 523 1450. We're going over the details of Christian dominionism that Ted Cruz believes, and we'll be right back.
It's a neon,
All right. Now, the most controversial part of dominionism, and there are a lot of controversial parts, although it is nice to hear about the justice system being somewhat dismantled in the way that they would take care of a lot of the crimes, makes a lot more sense to me. But here is a guy by the name of Kevin Swanson, who put together a presidential forum and is calling for death to gays. He's a pastor.
Because the appropriate punishment for the crime of being gay is that the government should have you killed.
Yes, Leviticus 20:13 calls for the death penalty for homosexuals. Yes, Romans chapter 1, verse 32, the Apostle Paul does say that homosexuals are worthy of death. His words, not mine. And I am not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Front page of the newspaper, two homosexuals, the leadership of the Colorado House, performing a homosexual act on the front page of the Denver Post.
We violated the laws of God at every opportunity. We had the worst legislature, the worst fires, and the worst floods. And I suggested, I didn't say, but I suggested there might be a connection.
Yeah. I suggested perhaps Colorado was worse, was more evil than communist China.
All right. So when I was hearing about these type of things, the desire to impose Old Testament biblical law and punishment, I had been thinking about this for quite a while. What do we know about the Old Testament law? Well, it's laid out in the Bible. But just as important, what do we know about Old Testament punishment? So I began to research it, and I was surprised to find that it was unusual for capital punishment to be levied in under Jewish law. Now, that's what my sources tell me, which brings a totally different light on this. You know, these people who are talking about bringing in Old Testament law and punishment, well, what was the punishment? Here's a little bit from one source. The harshness of the death penalty indicated the seriousness of the crime. Jewish philosophers argue that the whole point of the corporal punishment or death penalty here was to serve as a reminder to the community of the severe nature of certain acts. That is why in Jewish law, the death penalty is more of a principle than a practice. Numerous references to a death penalty in the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, underscore the severity of the sin rather than the expectation of death. This is bolstered by the standards of proof required for application of the death penalty, which has always been extremely stringent. Because the standards of proof were so high, it was almost impossible to inflict the death penalty. Now, think about that. So you've got these people that are running around demanding that we apply Old Testament law, even though we're in a New Testament period, because the New Testament essentially abrogates or changes the law. It really changes the law. But you see that Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, he does say that we are still under the Ten Commandments, right? But the way that he applies it is different. But, you know, one of the sins that was punishable by death was basically talking back to your parents. And I'm thinking, I think this is what first got me thinking about this, is like the parent is really going to turn the kid into the Sanhedrin or whatever, and they're going to kill him. I mean, that's just not going to happen. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that it never happened, but so as I began to research this, I found again and again that these crimes are hardly ever punished by death. So what right do these people in claiming that they're bringing the Old Testament to the modern world, these laws, what right do they have to apply a death penalty to something like that, even if they wanted to bring up the law, because the Jews themselves didn't apply the death penalty. All right, listen to this. Here is four ways of capital punishment that are outlined in the Bible. Number one, stoning. Number two, burning. Number three, hanging. And then under Talmudic law, well, those are three ways right there, but there is slaying. There's also strangling. So this is what kind of captured my interest for burning. What they do is they take two pieces of cloth and they wrap it around the person's neck. They have two people pulling on each side until the person has to open their mouth because they're starting to suffocate. Then they pour down the throat boiling metal. I mean, talk about a way to go, you know. Holy cow. So anyway, now I'll come back. We'll take a break of the hour here and talk a little bit about Glenn Beck and his approach, his prophetic approach. He's tied in very tightly with Cruz. Beck is also kind of a backdoor dominionist in his own way, even though he's Mormon. Kelly O'Connell, 659 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450. We'll be back after a break on the hour. It's a Morris, so we have been talking about dominionism in the theology and the really the political system of Ted Cruz. Now, I don't know exactly what this guy believes, but I know that he's very close with his father, and his father is a dominionist. And if you've been listening to the show, that you will have a better understanding of what dominionism is. They want to run everything off of Christian law. That law is taken out of the Old Testament, including capital punishment for a lot of crimes. And my reaction to that is I went back and started to study. I was trying to figure out, like, what were the Jews like? I mean, they've got this law with arguably the greatest law out of the ancient world. And not only is it laid out, but the reasoning behind it is laid out, which is you don't find, say, for example, in the Code of Hammurabi, you don't find anything like that. And, you know, for most of these codes in the ancient world, you just find parts of the law. You don't find the legislative history and that type of thing. So if there was any legislative history, I mean, the Code of Hammurabi is not the result of legislation. But in any event, dominionism seeks to take dominion of the earth over back for Christians, and that what they want to do is put into place kind of a libertarian paradise. They want to break the justice system down as much as possible, create very short stays in jail, and then, you know, dramatic outcomes. You go to trial. If you're found innocent, obviously you get off. If you're found guilty, you could be executed. You could have involuntary servitude. But small government, dominionism is based on small government and the government being broken down. And it's basically Christian libertarianism. All right. Now, switching gears here to a person who I think it is fair to say is a John the Baptist type in his mind for Ted Cruz. Now, Glenn Beck, if you have caught up with him, if you have watched him at all, has been coming out with prophetic statements about the end of the world for years. Now he's tied in with Ted Cruz. And what I'm kind of interested in is, you know, Glenn Beck is a Mormon. He's Mormon in his theology. So what is Ted Cruz, who's Protestant, he's very Protestant, he's Reformed Protestant. How does he justify being involved with Glenn Beck, with Glenn Beck getting up and giving prophetic utterances, which you have to say are Mormon statements? I mean, his theology is Mormon. His God is Mormon. And there's another guy that works for Beck. His name is Barton. And Barton has written a lot of, he's a huge name in Christian circles. He's a historian. He's not trained as a historian, but he is, David Barton is the historian for Glenn Beck. And he's a Christian. So how do these, I'm just curious how these people in their mind justify this mix of what most theologians, Christian theologians would say would be radically contradictory elements, even if on the surface they seem like they're the same thing. Anyway, here's something from Glenn Beck on his audience being remembered as the generation that kind of basically saved America.
Talk to you today. If you have listened to this program, and you have heeded the warnings, I want to go over the record, because as I'm listening to everybody on television saying it's 1968, I've been saying that 2016 would be 1968 for how many years? 2 years? Who else was saying that it was 1968 in this summer? Who else was predicting that? Nobody else was predicting that. And now, just like the caliphate, they just go on like, yeah, but... Would somebody like to know what happens after this summer of 1968? Because I can tell you. 1999, I told you about Osama bin Laden. In 2004, I started warning about the housing collapse. All the way from 2004 to 2008, I was warning about the housing and banking collapse. In 2003, I started interviewing people in the GOP and said, you better be careful. They're going to come for you with pitchforks and torches. Don't you understand what's happening? Don't you understand what you're doing? This means the downfall of the GOP. In 2008, I said, they're going to start admitting that they're Marxist and socialist. In 2010, the caliphate. In 2006, the Bubba effect. In 2009, the pendulum swing and the rise of the radical right here in America.
These are all claims of having made prophetic statements, prophecies. Just bear that in mind.
2010, I started telling you about top down, bottom up, inside out. In 2016 or 2014, I started telling you that it was 1968. This summer would be 1968. Those are just some of them. I've been telling you for how long to prepare to be Martin Luther King. You don't think I felt stupid telling you that? You don't think I looked at all of the press that said, oh, Glenn Beck thinks that he's the leader, he's the next Martin Luther King, and I didn't read all the articles that said there's no hatred, there's nothing like that to battle against. You don't think I was on my knees begging the Lord? What the hell does that even mean? This is the time. This is the time. And this is the time when we're going to build lifeboats. This is the time when we're going to be the group of people that will be remembered in history as saving the Republic.
All right. So prophecies have been given to Glenn Beck from God. But if you're a Christian, if you're a traditional Christian, a Protestant or whatever, or if you're Catholic, who is Glenn Beck praying to? Because the Mormons use a different set of books in addition to the Bible, right? All right, here's another clip from him.
Years I have been warning about.
And this one's called God Has Prepared and Sanctified.
Years I have been warning about what is coming this summer. I have to be honest with you. When I was saying some of these things that sounded crazy all the way back at CNN and at Fox and then on The Blaze, I have taken an awful lot of heat from the media. The media has had a good laugh at my expense. Everybody has, and that's fine. I will be honest with you. There were times, many times, that I would say, really? Really? Can I just cover the news, tell a few jokes, and call it a day? Really? But because this is so... say it anyway. Because he saved me, and because I know that I can never repay him back for that, because he literally saved my life, I made a promise to him. I will do what you want me to do. I will say what you want me to say. I will go where you want me to go. And so I have. And he put a warning message on my heart. And I didn't understand a lot of it. The Restoring series came out of that. When we gathered in Washington, restoring honor. When we went to Jerusalem, restoring courage. Here at Dallas Cowboy Stadium, restoring love. I didn't know why I was doing those things. I fought a lot of those things. I didn't know why we were doing them. They cost me millions of dollars to do. We lost money on them. We never gained ratings or anything else from them. It was because we felt compelled we had to do it. But it struck me over the weekend, his genius. I have said for a long time, this is going to be the audience that saves the Republic. It is clear this was preparation and sanctification.
Let me ask you something. Who is Glenn Beck praying to? All right, let's take a break here. 7:16 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. And we'll be right back to carry on with this conversation on religion in the 2016 presidential race.
Every night I say a prayer in the hopes that there's a heaven. And every day I'm more confused. as the saints come in to sinner. All the heroes and legends I knew as a child have fallen to our place. And I feel this empty place inside. So afraid that I've lost my faith. Show me the way. Show me the way. Take me tonight to the river and wash my illusions away.
It's Kelly.
Boy, Kelly, listening to the show, I've decided that if I wasn't going to vote for Hillary, I would vote for Donald over Cruz, because from people who bring that much religion into the way they're going to run the country, I find very disturbing.
I thought you might.
Oh, yeah. I find most religious people disturbing, no matter what religion they are. They somehow believe that all this writing, the Bible and the Ten Commandments, were directly from God. They were from the mind of man who felt they were inspired by a creator. I mean, these men wrote everything to control the masses.
Kathy.
I don't want to go on the air, Kelly. So, anyhow, it's a good show, but it's way more religion than I care for. I'm going to go.
I thought you wanted this.
No, it gives me a pit in my stomach to listen to all of this.
We're on the air. Are you ready?
No.
You're not coming on the air?
Yeah, go ahead if you want.
All right, folks, we got Kathy. Kathy was lured out of bed this morning by hearing the message. Kathy, go ahead.
Hallelujah, I've been saved, huh? No, I find it very disturbing. I always have that people bring their religion into government. You know, when Kennedy ran, everybody was so worried that he was going to be beholden to the Pope and not to the country. And, that didn't happen. So I'm confident that whoever gets in probably is not going to drag their religion into the way they're running the country. But the number of people who seem to want to put religion and their specific take on religion into how other people should live, I find disturbing. And
well,
especially,
you've got to, Kathy, don't you have to get your rules or ideas from somewhere? I mean, where do liberals get their ideas from?
Well, Kelly, the founding fathers were free thinkers. They were deists. What were they called? They were deists, where they believed in God, but then after God created everything, he's not involved anymore. They based their thoughts on not so much as their religious beliefs, it's just the free thinking of free people,
well,
the rights of people,
Kathy,
to exist, and
Kathy,
not to be ruled by,
Kathy, I think you're,
by a specific religion.
Hello, Kathy, I think you're putting a gloss on it that is non-historical. The founding fathers were summing up the history of America in what they were doing. I mean, America was started as a religious colony. So, I mean, how do you just wipe that out?
No, I just don't believe that. America was not founded as a religious colony.
Of course. Let me ask you something, Kathy. Kathy, hold on a second. Have you ever studied the founding documents of the initial colonies? I'll bet you haven't.
No.
All right, then how would you know? How would you know,
Kathy?
How would you know how America was founded if you haven't studied it?
Well, I flip through the internet and I read articles just like other people, just like you do. I was flipping through this morning as you prepared for your show. I was reading how the founding fathers are not Christians. Were not Christians. They did not base this on their Christian beliefs. They were enlightened people who were free thinkers and wanted freedom from religion, the ability to practice what you wanted, but not to impose it on other people. It wasn't founded specifically for the Christian
religion. All right,
religion.
All right, but Kathy.
Nowhere in our documents, our Constitution,
Kathy,
is God, Christ, or anybody else mentioned.
God is mentioned. God is mentioned in the Declaration. Declaration is the shot across the bow. It's the introduction to the Constitution.
Okay, you know.
I mean, is not God mentioned in the at the very beginning? So I mean, so you can't say that.
I'm not saying they did not believe in God. They did not believe in taking your Christian religion and imposing it for who were not Christian.
All of those men went to church.
No, they didn't, Kelly.
They did go to church. Did you know that Thomas, I'm going to guess you haven't studied this, but did you know that Thomas Jefferson took a Bible and made his own Bible? That's how much interest, how interested he was in the life of Christ. He made his own New Testament.
Well, you know, good for him. But when you get down to it today, and if Ted Cruz is going to get in and bring dominionism, I mean, this is what the Arab world is waiting for. I mean, this is what they're hoping for. Declare this caliphate of Christ, and we can go up against Muhammad, and we will seek the Third World War over religion. I mean, it doesn't matter that it all leads back to the same
Kathy.
God. Each one thinks God
Kathy.
Looks at their religion differently.
Okay, but Kathy, hold on a second. Your buddy Obama has already pretty much laid the foundation for the Third World War by making an extraordinary number of mistakes in the Middle East. That has nothing to do with Christianity.
I don't think he made mistakes in the Middle East. That's my opinion. You guys do.
Muslim Spring? Muslim Spring, anybody?
I think George Bush made...
I'm sure that he did. I'll stipulate to that. Obama has made an extraordinary mess of the Middle East. But, you don't see that.
The Middle East
of course.
An extraordinary mess for the last 2,000 years.
All right. Okay, America becoming more Christian is not going to harm anything. Thanks for the call. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? Turn down your radio.
Yes, sir. This is Jerry. Hi, Kelly. How are you?
Hey, what's up? How's it going?
Pretty good. I have a quote. I hope Kathy's listening. This is John Adams.
Yeah.
The second president of the United States, and this is a quote, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other."
Yeah, no, I mean, the only way to have a democracy, have open government, have an open society is for the people to be moral. The only way that the founding fathers said the only way for the people to be moral was for them to be essentially take on whether they were Christian or not, for the people to have Christian values. That's what the founders believed. I mean, I would say this to Kathy. Kathy, do some study before you get on the radio and tell people about the history. You haven't studied the history of America. You don't know that the original colonies were religious people who were escaping religious persecution. I'm astounded, Kathy. I thought you were more educated than that. Jerry, got another call. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Deborah. Good morning, everybody. Didn't they come over to America? Yes, definitely for freedom because it was just too controlling. Was it more than
I mean,
Catholic
there's this whole story of what happened when the founders, when the colonists came over here, and it had an extraordinary degree with people trying to escape religious persecution in Europe and come over here and start a society where they would not be persecuted for their beliefs and they would have freedom to practice as they chose. That is our story. The fact that Kathy doesn't know that is alarming. Are you there? Thanks for the call. All right. So how do you not know that the colonists were... I mean, okay, more specifically, the colonists were actually tended to be Congregationalists. So that's where our theory of democracy comes from. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Morgan. I'm sorry. I forgot I had myself on mute. My sister's a Mormon.
Okay.
And they deny the blood of Christ because they don't even take Holy Communion.
Well,
just with water. It's okay sometimes.
Mormonism is, according to any Christian theologian that you run into, is going to tell you that Mormons are not Christians. By And if you talk to Christians off the record, they don't claim to be biblical Christians. They claim to be Mormon. They have a new revelation that they're following. And, I mean, more power to them. But, I mean, that's why I was asking, who was Glenn Beck praying to?
Right, that's true. And they always say Father God. They never really get into Jesus.
Well,
the Holy Spirit?
Mormons believe that Elohim came and started this earth or was given this earth, and then Adam and Eve and all that stuff. Basically, people are going to become gods if they do the right thing on earth, and then they're going to be given their own planet. That's what Mormons believe. So there's millions of gods out in the universe.
And they baptize their dead. That's why they have the big history.
Well,
they baptize
the dead to save them. So, but the Jews got angry at them because they were getting these rolls of names out of Auschwitz and Dachau, and what they do is immersion baptism, proxy. It's called proxy baptism. You put somebody in the water, you dunk them in somebody else's name, and then you pray for them, and they believe that'll give Jewish people a chance to be in the Mormon heaven. And frankly, the Jews didn't want that. And they called him up and said, would you knock it off?
Yeah. Did you get that bag yesterday?
I did. Thank you for bringing it by, Deborah. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Have a great weekend. All right. Deborah brought a little bit of a peace offering, a love offering there. All right. So here is a little bit on Zika before we take a break. Zika. Oh, and I told you I have a Zika map for you. The Zika map tells me that there are three levels of cities that are in danger from the Zika virus: high, moderate, and low. And from San Antonio and Dallas over, well, anyway, for our area, from Dallas on over, it's low risk of, but we are on the map as a risk. So just, you know, bear that in mind as this mosquito season starts. Here's a little bit from New York's Zika plan. And this is from CBS in New York.
Today, the state of New York unveiled a plan to combat the spread of the Zika virus. CBS 2's Sonia Raccone has those details.
There are 49 confirmed cases of Zika in New York. About half of them are in the city, and the state is preparing for many more come mosquito season this spring and summer.
Some of the speculation or the expectations are that you could have a significant number of people affected. So we want to make sure we're ahead of it.
That's why the governor and state health department today announced a six-step plan to fight the spread of Zika in New York. Health Commissioner Dr. Howard Zucker says it'll start with distributing larvicide tablets for standing water and encouraging people to get rid of clean water in containers where mosquitoes breed.
Such as old tires, children's toys, plastic containers, and even clogged gutters, especially after it rains.
The plan is to eliminate the virus at its source, aggressively monitor with mosquito testing, offer protection kits for pregnant women, which would include bug spray and condoms.
All right, so Zika is also transmitted by sexual contact, one of the interesting facts about it. So I guess that would apply to us, too, to get rid of standing water, tires, that type of thing. But be on your guard on Zika. 731 Kelly O'Connell AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523-1450. Oh, and we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Deborah. Can you relay to Kelly? Because he was just talking about mosquitoes. If you take high doses of vitamin D, I forget which one it is.
Thank you very much. I am Kelly. All right, folks, we'll take a break and be right back.
For a moment, dreams are sacred. Close my eyes and know that we're in a world so filled with hatred.
Yes. Are you the one answering for Kelly?
This is Kelly.
Okay, I'm sorry, you're working over. Yeah, can you announce to them if you take a lot of the B vitamins, I'll find out exactly which B vitamin it is, the mosquitoes won't bite you. They don't like the smell on you.
All right, I'll let everybody know. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so you remember Malachi Love Robinson, the 18-year-old who was detained last month, maybe it was 2 months ago, for pretending to be a doctor, a medical doctor? He's back in the news.
Teenager caught impersonating doctor is now behind bars for another crime. Christina Noce with our Scripps affiliate WPTV in West Palm Beach has more.
He's a man known as Dr. Love, previously arrested for impersonating a doctor. His online profile saying he's 25 years old. Well, now this 18-year-old teenager is now back in jail, sitting behind bars here at the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office, facing new serious charges, larceny of at least $20,000 and five separate fraud charges for using someone else's identity without their consent. Love Robinson was previously arrested on February 16th on grand theft charges after an 86-year-old woman claimed he defrauded her after making a series of visits to her home to treat her for severe stomach pain. Robinson, who has been surprisingly very open to talking to the media, has defended his actions multiple times, saying he never told anyone he was a medical doctor and that he has a PhD. Although he has never been willing to say what kind of PhD that is. His online profile, which has since been taken down, says he only uses physiological methods like air, water, and heat to treat patients. Robinson bonded out on those initial charges about 2 weeks ago. Now he is back in jail this morning. He's expected to see a judge. Of course, we'll keep you updated on this story. In West Palm Beach, I'm Christina Noce. Back to you.
He must be a witch doctor if he's only using, you know, those elements. All right. So this kid is, he held his own news conference, Dr. Love. And they did some research and found out that not only does he not have a PhD, but he doesn't have a regular degree. Because he never graduated high school, they tried to get him to redo 10th grade after he had finished, and he said, "I prefer to be homeschooled." So, anyway, here's his video conference. Palm Beach Post.
Good evening, everyone. First of all, I would just like to simply say that of myself and my family, we thank you for the concerns in the community about the accusations that have happened. I just want to say that I am deeply saddened and a little disrespected by some of the things that have come forth. But I will say that my attorneys are working hard. They're working around the clock to make sure that this issue gets resolved in the best way possible. I would just simply ask that you please allow the attorneys to do their job. You respect the privacy, you respect my privacy and my family's privacy, and just please allow us to deal with this issue the way any normal family would. And I would simply ask that if you could please pray for us in this time that everything that's happened, that we get the truth out of it. And not only the truth, but we can shed some good light on some of the things that are happening in the community today, that we can shed a good light on some of the positive things that are happening and stop worrying about bashing someone and start lifting them up. Once again, I want to thank everyone for their support, whether it was good or bad. I've had some great supporters, and I've had some people who have said some negative things. But everyone is entitled to their opinion. And once again, I am not upset, and I respect the community for the concerns that they have. But once again, just please respect our wishes and allow our attorneys to do the best that they can to work on this case. Thank you so very much, and have a great night.
His lawyer says he's Trump-like in his self-promotions. But he said, you know, the main thing is not me. It's getting some health care to the community. The 18-year-old would-be Doogie Howser Jordan doctor. Now, here's his grandpa. And here we go. He's they interviewed his grandfather, and his grandfather, even though he was just 18 and is a high school dropout, his grandfather thought he may be a doctor.
A West Palm Beach teenager accused of posing as a doctor and stealing from a woman he was supposedly treating, you can see, walked out during a live interview on Good Morning America today.
Local 10's Eric Yutzi spoke with his grandfather.
Sorry, I'm going to have to cut this interview short.
Malachi Love Robinson walking out of an interview on Good Morning America. He is the teenager who was arrested, accused of practicing medicine without a license in West Palm Beach.
He felt like he was trying to do the right thing. So he wasn't trying to hide from nobody.
So you don't think your grandson should be considered a con man?
No.
William McKenzie standing by his grandson, telling Local 10 that Love Robinson will fight the charges that include accusations that he stole and forged checks from an 86-year-old patient, $3,500 she allegedly paid him for medical visits.
I know nothing about that.
Does that sound like something your grandson would do?
Not that I know of.
Accusations are merely accusations. And services, you'd have to define that. Whether she paid for me to just show up, that's up to her.
He wasn't trying to be a con man. He was trying to help somebody.
Suite 303 in this office building, that is where Love Robinson was operating his practice. But as you can see, the doors are now locked. Any evidence that he was ever here, gone. Before opening up shop in this medical center, he reportedly was stopped in 2015 while claiming to work at a West Palm Beach hospital. He told GMA he was a doctor, but not an MD.
I do currently hold a PhD in what I don't feel comfortable disclosing because that is not the issue here.
That's a degree McKenzie admits he's never seen, and is not quite sure what we'll see next from his grandson.
He's a very good young man. He has good intentions. He was out trying to help people. If it's something that he did wrong, he's going to have to admit it and be a man and stand up to it.
In West Palm Beach, I'm Eric Yutzi, Local 10 News.
And
he's out trying to help people. But now he's getting sued by West Palm Beach or South Florida automobile dealership for buying a car with a rubber check, and so now he owes them a lot of money for a 2016 Mazda, $27,000 car. He used one of his patients' bank accounts, if you know what I mean. Now, he went to Palm Beach Lakes Community High for the 10th grade in 2013, only a couple years ago, folks. See how easy it is to become a doctor? By the end of that year, teachers wanted to hold him back a year. He's got a speech impediment of some kind. He dropped out of the district, preferring to do some homeschooling. It's not clear if he has a GED, but I don't know. Kind of an exciting life he's living. 744, Kelly O'Connell will come back and switch gears. AM Las Cruces, 1450. KOBE, 523, 1450. We'll be right back. Got some weather for you. All right, guys, I have a mystery for you. Richard Simmons has dropped out of the public spotlight. There are claims There are claims he's being held against his will. But check this out. Richard Simmons, the famous weight loss and fitness guru. A friend of his went over to see him, and he had the impression that Richard Simmons was being held against his will by a Mexican housekeeper who thinks that she's married to him. It's all very weird. Check this out.
We're going to start the skinny with a celebrity mystery. So many of you are probably wondering, where in the world is Richard Simmons?
Okay, the legendary fitness fanatic used to be everywhere for decades. He was a mainstay of late-night comedy shows and daytime talk shows, not to mention his own infomercials. But the 67-year-old hasn't been seen in public for 2 years.
And concern among his fans bubbled over this weekend. He even started trending on Facebook. Several friends fear his housekeeper is controlling him with witchcraft. But Richard has apparently put those concerns to rest, weighing in on Facebook. But, of course, we still haven't seen him, so perhaps the mystery continue.
Glad we got to the bottom of this.
Next, we plan to find out where in the world is Carmen Sandiego.
That's tomorrow's show. Now to a whole group.
All right, so here is the story, and this is from the Daily Mail. Richard Simmons with the Mexican housekeeper who considers herself his wife, in quotes, believes she will, quote, inherit everything and poison him against former personal assistant. Is Richard Simmons straight? Could he have a wife? A glamorous in a sequin sweater and ruby red lipstick, this housekeeper is accused of kidnapping Richard Simmons. Former personal assistant Mauro Oliveira claims the housekeeper Teresa Ravelis is using black magic to control the fitness guru. He told Daily Mail Online that Simmons confided to him that he was under her thumb. And Simmons's trip to Europe with his longtime friend and assistant Oliveira was wrecked by Ravelis. She hid notes declaring that she and his Dalmatian dog were missing Richard in his luggage, upsetting the sensitive star. Shortly after they returned to the U.S., Oliveira had a fateful final meeting with Simmons during which he was told to get out by Ravelis. If you want to know what he does most of the time, I would say sleeping most of the time. Teresa believes she's going to inherit everything because Richard's brother is older than him and Richard is not a big fan of the sister-in-law. So that is what has happened to Richard Simmons. And there's several pictures in here. And there's also a picture of Richard Simmons cross-dressing, but fortunately you can't see it. All right, so let's take a little break here and got a few more stories for you. And we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450, KOBE,
523-1450.
All right, there's a story that's kind of breaking news. Texas game wardens are now looking for poachers and terrorists along the Texas coast, and game wardens are now also carrying radiation detectors, FYI. All right, here is something on the water diet. Now, it has been told to us for decades, for years, that it's important to drink at least 8 glasses of water for our health. And they've studied this and found that there is absolutely no substance to this, just like there's no substance to water. But it actually is not a bad idea to drink water if you want to lose weight, because by drinking more water, you can lose between 69 and 206 calories a day. And that is from the Atlantic Monthly. Now, here's an article, and I think that I mentioned this to you before, but they did a study of study. They did a study of scientific studies, and here is what the headlines say, and this is from QZ.com. Many scientific truths, in quote, are in fact false. And in 2005, John Ioannidis, a professor of medicine at Stanford University, published a paper called Why Most Published Research Findings Are False, mathematically showing that a huge number of published papers must be incorrect. He also looked at a number of well-regarded medical research findings and found that 34 had been retested. And he found that of the 34 that had been retested, 41% had been contradicted or found to be significantly exaggerated. Since then, researchers in several scientific areas have consistently struggled to reproduce major results of prominent studies. By estimates, at least 51% or more than half, and as much as 89% of published papers are based on studies and experiments showing results that cannot be reproduced. And as you, being the highly educated audience that you are, realize that science is based on reproducibility. Come up with a theory, test it. If it comes out a certain way, you test it again and see if you can reproduce it. Researchers have called this now, especially in psychology, a reproducibility crisis. Since Brian Nosek, a psychology professor at the University of Virginia, coordinated a, quote, reproducibility initiative project to repeat 100 psychological experiments and could only successfully replicate 40%. So now there's been another attempt to replicate another key psychological concept, ego depletion, the idea that willpower is finite and can be worn down by overuse. And they've come up short, and they found that there is no such thing. So why are they getting it wrong? Journals favor novelty, originality, and verification of hypotheses over robust, stringent methods. Reproducibility and falsifiability. Therefore, researchers have been driven to finding significant effects, finding things that are novel, testing them on relatively small samples, and then getting it wrong. So anyway, if you study these type of things and you listen to the developments in society, for example, I'll just use one that comes to mind. What would be, now that we've had a change in the law on gay marriage, what would be the impact of gay parenting on children? Well, we don't have a lot of samples to go off of, but you can bet the way that the society is developing and the sciences are being really misused, that if somebody came up with a study, and they actually did this, there was a guy at the University of Texas who did a study on people who were raised in gay homes and found out that these children struggle more than kids out of straight homes. And there was this ferocious attack on this guy. It was just unbelievable. And I'm trying to remember the researcher's last name, but it was a monument in my mind at the time to the fact that you cannot take a position that is not politically correct without coming under an incredible amount of fire. And the upshot is that if you're a scientist, you can't have a finding that goes against popular opinion, because you will be driven out of the sciences. That you will have, you know, and this guy, I think his first name was Brian. Anyway, I don't remember his last name. He was immediately attacked, and he had a number of groups send in requests to have him, basically taken out of the faculty, to have his work discredited and everything. And, so think about this. We're living in a time when you cannot do science that is outside of public opinion. And, I mean, science is about discovering new things. And a lot of the novelty, a lot of the changes in society are supported by this bad science. So you see right here, In the psychological sciences, 60% of the studies that are coming out that people are using in arguments and debates and making laws and stuff, they're using this stuff, and it's actually false science. So, I mean, be very careful when you read these things, because it's a lot of this stuff is not they're not really doing science. What they're doing is they're misusing science to prop up their theories, and so it's become another political tool. It's sad to say. All right, so trying to think of anything else here. And I'm looking at one last article here that Is that okay? We got a phone call. Thanks for the call. Who's this?
This is Brian.
Yeah. Brian, just a few. We just have a few seconds, so go ahead and make your point.
Okay. I was just going to tell you, you might want to go check out the decisionamericantour.com website. That's Frank McGrann was in Santa Fe. It's got a picture of a bunch of people in Santa Fe just the other day.
Who was it?
Franklin Graham.
Oh, okay. And I need to go check this out. Why?
Just because he talks about Christians' involvement in politics.
Oh,
probably
okay.
Has a little more balanced.
Well, Brian, I'm running. No, I don't. I don't. But can you call me back on Monday? Because we're literally out of time.
Okay.
Thanks,
later.
Brian. Okay. All right, folks. We'll take you out here. Thanks for tuning in. I enjoyed hanging out with you. And have a great day. Have a nice week. And I'll meet you back in 2 days. Ciao.